And good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and opening up tomorrow night at 7:30 in the East Bank Theater, Bossier City, Stage Center Productions presents Red, a play about artist Mark Rothko by John Logan. And joining me now in our Knoll Foundation studios are Jim Coles, who plays Mark Rothko in this production, and Daniel Salazar, who plays Rothko's assistant, Ken, in this show. Daniel and Jim, thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
So Mark Rothko, a big artist from the 1950s, from that era when we were moving out of abstract expressionism, which still had some kind of concrete imagery in it, into a world where it was all fantasy and imagination. Dolly started to lead the way, and Kandinsky and others, but Rothko came along and he was very abstract. Could you tell us a little bit about this play and its relation to Mark Rothko? What does he have to do with this?
Sure. Mark Rothko was the could be considered the premier abstract expressionist based in New York City in the beginning in the late 40s and through the 50s into the early 60s. He and Jackson Pollock and several others led the abstract expressionist movement. And they were the big art movement in the art world at that time. Yes, what you said is correct, that they were slowly being supplanted by pop art,
right?
Such as Andy Warhol and others. And that conflict or that coming change in the art world is throughout the play, runs throughout the play, is a big part of the plot. The plot itself takes place in... The play itself takes place in Rothko's studio in the Bowery in New York City that he ran by himself, in which he created huge canvases of his art. And specifically, the play is about his commission that he received to decorate with his canvases the new Four Seasons restaurant in the new Seagram building, which is still extant, still there, still running. In New York City, it was the biggest art commission of the world at the time, and Rothko got that commission. And the subject of the play and a lot of the tension and problems in the play arise from Rothko's conflict over whether to do such a commission, which is basically giving in to commercialism for the benefit of a restaurant. Or does he stick to a higher goal of pure art? And so that's a big part of the conflict of the play.
So really it seems like this is a play about values, consciousness, and survival, really. I mean, in the art world, you know, it's yeah. One thing to paint, you know, for ideology and for purpose. It's another thing to actually have three squares a day and be able to live, you know, and feed yourself. So as
and
you
Rothko
know,
took his artwork extremely spiritually and important, and it was the only way he could survive. And if he felt like this was a failure, he may not survive.
Right. And so what is your role? You, Daniel, you play Ken in this, and you're his assistant, but you're more than that in reality.
Yeah.
I mean, every person who works with a great artist has a tremendous influence within their life. How do you play into Mark Rothko's mind?
So at the beginning of the show, I come in as an assistant. It's kind of like a job interview, and end up getting the job. And that's how you first meet me. And, you know, he teaches me a lot about what art means to him in those few moments. And as the play progresses, you know, I become more comfortable where I am and learning a lot more and trying to give my feedback and, you know, trying to say some of the things I've learned. And I become more comfortable in the studio as time goes on. As the play goes on and I start to learn a lot of things about Rothko, you know, my views kind of get in there, and I kind of show Rothko that he's kind of contradicting himself towards the end, because he's taking such a big commission, one of the biggest commissions in the world at that time, like he said, and he's taking that commission to do this art, and that's something he, you know, railed against is commercialism in art. And so I kind of make him realize that, you know, you're just contradicting yourself. So that's kind of how I play a role in it. It's very student teacher relationship, you know, father-son relationship, which is kind of funny because of one of the situations in the show with me, you know, losing family members so young, you know, that gets brought up in the show. And it's funny that he becomes that father figure, but he doesn't want to be that father figure. And, you know, he bashes me for thinking that he could be that father figure, even though he's not, but he really is. You know, it's that's kind of, if that makes sense.
So there's a lot of dynamics between not only the philosophy about art, but as a young person hearing what an older person says, but, you know, do they do it? You know, do as I do, not as I, you know, or do as I say, not as I do, versus living, you know, the people we tend to respect are those who say what they mean what they say, you know, and live by what they mean.
And, you know, he pushes his values so much that it kind of irritates me to a point, because I have values and I like the art that I like, and what I value would be a lot different than what, you know, he values or deems worthy as art. You know, because Ken is a really, really interested in pop art, and he loves it. I think he thinks it's a fun thing. Art is art for him. You know, it's not as spiritual as Rothko would like Ken to think it is. But I still think Ken thinks there is some spiritualism in art and really gets into what Rothko has to offer and, you know, what he, you know, what he values art to be. So,
well, what is Rothko? I mean, what's the core of his artistic perspective from your point of view?
Well, he fully believed his life was through his paintings, and that paintings are meant to be engaged with on a spiritual level, to move you, to overpower you, to completely take over a person. They're not to be just looked at. They are to be part of your life, and they infuse you. And he took it. His view of art was extremely serious, very spiritual, and all-consuming. And this idea that pop art was coming into popularity, Roy Lichtenstein, Stein, Rauschenberg, Andy Warhol, and the others, he could not abide, because he didn't feel there was anything serious about any of that. And to him, that was a sacrilege in art, that his art, Rothko's art, was truly religious in nature, spiritual, and all-consuming.
It almost seems like for Rothko, the artist was not the subject matter, whereas for Andy Warhol, I mean, really, Andy Warhol was the art, his flamboyant lifestyle, his exuberance, the fact that he would just take everyday objects and just, he was almost in-your-face iconoclastic in a sense, you know. He was almost tearing down the pretenses of the Rothko world, in a sense, and so there was that combat going on in the art world.
And that level of that combat is all through the play, runs through the entire play.
So you feel that strain going on in Rothko, you know. He's getting the attention, and my work is meaningful, and this is trite drivel, and of course that's still going on today.
I mean, that
continues to go on, the battle between pop art, which is newly inventive art, and you know, the great classics and all of that. That's a never-ending saga. I mean, it's actually happened with every age, whether it was, you know, Bach not necessarily liking the classicist, or the classicist not liking the romanticist, or the romanticist not understanding the impressionist, you know.
The play itself is a brilliant work. It's by a writer, or he's an American writer named John Logan. It's a short play. It's 90 minutes. But there's so much happening within the play that is incredibly well written. It premiered in 2010 in both London and New York. It won all the Tony Awards as best play.
Six of them all together.
And Alfred Molina played Rothko, and Eddie Redmayne played his Broadway debut as Ken and won the Tony for it. But it was it won all the major awards of both in London and New York when it premiered. It's a brilliant piece of work.
Oh yeah.
And from a theater goer's point of view, this is one where you need to bring your ears, because the dialogue sounds like it is pretty much,
it's hefty.
and it's going to take you into this, to the thinking and the emotive world of these gentlemen.
We actually paint on stage. That's exactly right. And you are immersed in an artist studio to the point where there's a lot of paint flying, and we paint in through the show. And so, it's extremely demonstrative and active with the creative act. We actually paint several canvases in the show as Rothko.
And if listeners are familiar with the movie Pollock about Jackson Pollock, you know the torment you know, that an artist can go through. I think most artists are tormented to some degree. We don't know why, but that's where this creative expression comes
from. And that actually Pollock's torment is referenced by Rothko throughout the play.
Oh, okay. So that's
it's
a key
one of
Kin's
favorite artist.
Well, how did Rothko feel about Pollock?
he was very close to him and admired him greatly and did believe that he was one of the greatest painters of all time.
Yeah. One of the funny things about Pollock that came out was all of the so-called art critics that eventually fell in love with his painting, but initially just thought it would look like a bunch of spaghetti on the ground.
Right.
You know, it wasn't art. It wasn't creative. It didn't have any design, function, or structure. But slowly, as the audience began to like it, you find that they are suddenly champions of Pollock.
That's right.
And I'm sure that plays into Rothko, the sort of fickle nature of the people who are commenting on what he's doing.
In fact, that's very true. And in fact, the commission that Rothko had received, which is the subject matter of the play, to paint the canvases, murals for the Four Seasons restaurant in the Seagram building, which he ultimately rejected, those murals are now at the Tate Modern in London, where special rooms have been created. The latest Rothko went for $187 million.
Mm-hmm.
And during his lifetime, of course, nothing like anywhere near that. Right. And the art public and art critics rejected him. But, of course, now he's accepted as one of the greatest painters of the 20th century.
I think Van Gogh would have kept his ear if he had known what his painting was going to catch, you know, later on. Of course, he didn't.
And
he hardly made a dime in his own life.
In fact, Matisse and Van Gogh are highly referenced throughout the play.
Yeah. So all of the tormented artists who basically had a hard time getting through life, but their art lived on.
Right.
It almost reminds me of Alexander in the movie, you know, about Alexander the Great, or in Troy even, you know, if you're not willing to go that extra mile, no one will remember your name. And
that's
almost like Rothko wanted people to remember his name, and of course now the subject matter red, that refers in particular to a key painting in Rothko's repertory.
The Seagram panels, murals that he created, their predominant color was red, and red was his predominant color during that period. He later drifted toward black, and there are discussions in the play about what does that mean symbolically, death, life, passion. All the different connotations of red are thoroughly explored in the play, including blood, murder, death.
Right.
So emotionally, the play covers anything you can think about the word red is explored in the play.
Mm-hmm. And even I read one review where it said Rothko had said at one point that the biggest thing he's worried about is the black swallowing the red.
Correct.
Which is essentially his mind
depression.
Shutting down and depression and not being able to see a vision and put it on campus.
And Rothko ultimately committed suicide in his studio about some 10, 11 years after the time period of the play. And that, too, is referenced in the play, the coming possible end of Rothko, a brilliant artist's life.
Yeah, the torment of what a creative soul has to go
and
through.
And can he survive it or not?
Right. So for the staging of this, other than the canvas and that, you've got a studio design on stage.
Yeah.
Can you give us some visual cues as to what we can see and enjoy?
So unlike most productions that you see here, except at Sitting There, we're doing this at with a thrust. So there will be seating on stage. So you'll get a new perspective of you know, a theatrical production with getting different vantage points of seeing just a particular person's face during this one moment. So you get to see specific reactions that you wouldn't normally get to see.
Right.
It's really very realistically done. It's very dim lighting. So that's something that's very neat. And I like being the lighting designer. It's been one of the most unique designs I think I've done. With how dark it is and how dim it is. You know, most shows, you're just bright, you want to see everybody's faces, but this is very cinematic, if I could use that word. But you know, it's very candlelit, ambient, a lot of good ambient light. You know, it's really, really, really neat, really
Sounds like it brings about an intimacy between the audience and you know, a lot less distractions of other things around you've got just, you know, it's like that that camera move where they go in and blur everything out except the image of the person that you're supposed to be focusing on.
Yeah, definitely. And especially, like, I mean, as time goes on, it takes place over the period of 2 years, too. And we have seen changes that happen in between each scene out of the five scenes. And it relays, you know, things that have happened over time and different light shifts to change time here and change time there during this, you know, 30-second to a minute scene change. So It's a really smooth show, and it's very fast paced at times as well.
Well, who's our director for this?
Jared Watson, who is the executive director of Stage Center, and so this is the opening production of the 2016 season, and that we're very excited about. He's got a number of musicals, including The Little Mermaid, is coming up next,
and
Stage Center, this is now its fifth year, I believe.
Fifth season.
His productions are fantastic and thoroughly audience-involving and have been great successes. So it's a very exciting moment.
We're definitely hoping to grow a little bit this year.
Well, now, you've both been in theater for a little bit. Can you give us a little bit of a background on your productions and experience?
Oh, man.
Time to talk about yourself.
I've kind of been all over the place. You know, I grew up here in Shreveport-Bossier, and I did community theater when I was young and in high school. And I went to BPSI, learned a lot there, excellent theater program there. And then I moved off to Texas and did a little bit of college out there, started to do a little bit of tech design for theater, and then I came back home and got a lighting job working for Stage Center, and, you know, I've been with them since I've been back in these past 2.5, almost 3 years now, and I've done every lighting design since then, and so I stay really heavily involved with the group, and, you know, I've actually have now had the opportunity to direct shows. I did Bonnie and Clyde last spring, and they'll be directing James and the Giant Peach this fall with our juniors, which is I'm very, very excited about. But, you know, being able to work with such a cohesive group of people at a very young age for myself and my fellow coworkers is very it's a great breath of fresh air, because you don't have this not to say there's anything wrong with it, but this old view of, like, you know, it has to be a certain way, we have to stick it this way. We try and push things outside of the box and try and push our audience and do new things that people haven't seen before, and hopefully we start to gather a good audience of people that enjoy seeing stuff like that. So it's been a great 3 years working with Stage Center, and I hope to continue to keep working with them more. So
sounds like pushing that design is right up Rothko's alley.
Definitely.
And Artist Alley. So Jim, you've got quite a bit of you've worked on a number of productions.
Yeah, there. I've done. Been lucky and done theater through a lot of my life. I'm quite a bit older than Daniel here, so just had more opportunities.
You're not that old.
I've worked with every community theater in town since the late 60s, essentially. So.
And, I mean, you're a lawyer by practice, so...
Yeah, well, I've been an attorney for 35, 40 years and a litigator that entire time, and so I guess that just equals a frustrated actor.
Yeah.
So the courtroom is just another version of the theater.
It's theater. Yeah. Theater with very strict rules.
Only you don't have the script written yet.
Right, yeah, exactly. And what is the old saying? Never ask a question that you don't know the answer to.
That's right. That's right.
Well, tell folks how to get tickets and about the show times, because there's multiple shows.
So you can go to stagecenterla.com/red. Tickets are on sale online, or you can also buy them at the door. Our tickets are $15 for adults and seniors, and students are $10. But we also have a Friday show this Friday. Doors open at 7, shows at 7:30. Same on Saturday, doors open at 7, shows at 7:30. Then we have a Sunday at 3 p.m., and doors open 30 minutes prior. And the following weekend is Friday night, and then two shows on Saturday. Our Saturday matinee is at 2, and then our Saturday evening is at 7:30.
And give them the telephone number, Dan.
Oh, yeah. The telephone number for Stage Center, let me find it here. It's 318-218-9978. And you can also go to our Facebook and We have links there that you can follow as well if you're into the Facebooking.
Exactly. So, well, do you have any final thoughts you want to share with folks? Get them out.
I really would recommend people to come see the show because it's unlike anything that we've done. It's very, very in your face, you know, opposed to a lot of the musicals that we do. Right. You know, it's very theatrical. This one's pulled in a lot, and it's more real and something actually happening on stage.
A little grittier in terms of...
It's very dramatic. It's very human. It's very powerful.
Yeah.
And if you're a lover of the arts and you don't know what an artist goes through as they're trying to birth a creation, you'll find out in a play like this.
Yes.
Because having been around artists, you know, most of my professional career, there's a lot of torment in there that comes out in the music or the painting or whatever it is they're doing. And you have to understand that in order to understand the artist.
Exactly right. And as you mentioned, even in this play, music is a huge part of the production. So it's a subtle part, but it does
play a...
In Rothko's life, in reality, music was playing the entire time he worked. He created pictures, he was moved and motivated by the classics.
Oh, interesting.
So, it's very powerful music in it.
All right. Well, Jim and Daniel, I want to thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
That was Jim Coles, who plays Mark Rothko in this production, along with Daniel Salazar, who plays Rothko's assistant, Ken. And that's Stage Center's new production of Red by John Logan, which opens tomorrow night at 7:30 at the East Bank Theater in Bossier City, with multiple performances over the next week. For complete details, you can visit them at www.stagecenterla.com or call 318-218-9978. That's 318-218-9978. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.